Okay, what's going on, guys? We are live. Hopefully everybody can listen, you know, listen good and all that. Hopefully the audio is good. If for some reason audios are not good, just give us a thumbs down and we'll address that. But hey, week one just finished. Two teams won. Obviously there was two that didn't, and obviously there was one matchup in the AFC North. We're gonna discuss that too. But first, let's talk about that impressive rookie. And I'm just gonna get the floor straight up to Ace so he can tell us how he thought about Burrow, and then we all can address what we think about that matchup. Go ahead, Ace.
We'll go ahead and move the mic out of the way so you guys can see the Joe Burrow Tiger King shirt. Tiger King. Although we didn't get the storybook performance that we wanted, like the intro to the Joe Burrow story that we wanted, because it was negated by a BS offensive pass interference play, that's fine. The good thing is that Joe Burrow is the real deal, at least from this sample size that we've seen. I was extremely impressed, because for this guy to come in with no preseason, like having to adjust to NFL speed on the fly, like never literally playing a snap of NFL football in his life, he played pretty damn good. And I was impressed with a lot of things that he did. Obviously, there were miscues, so you expect rookies to have miscues. He had two dropped or two open misfires for John Ross and AJ Green that should have been touchdowns. And then obviously he had the ugly interception where he tried to make a pitch and obviously it was intercepted by Melvin Ingram. Not a smart idea. But several things stood out to me in terms of Joe Burrow in that game. Number one, he never gave up. Like usually rookies in that situation when Bobby Hart is just letting Joey Bosa completely murder you, most guys kind of, you know, tuck their tail, hide their legs. Like this man literally a couple plays later decided to audible a play, which we had heard that he had the ability to do, but we actually saw. And it not only works, he ends up taking it for a 20-yard touchdown, showing that he wasn't scared to run right through the lineman or anything like that. I love that. I also love the fact that there was one play where he did a hard pitch count. It was on a third down that the Bengals just really needed. Like, we hadn't been really doing anything on offense, and he was smart enough to get them to jump off sides and force the first down. The other thing that I kind of talked about on the show with Quincy was even before that drive, there was another drive where Joe Burrow, or on that drive or during that drive, he was smart enough to know that Joey Bosa was on the sidelines and kept doing the two-minute offense, to keep Joey Bosa on the sideline. So for me, this was a guy that played not like a rookie, very high IQ, you know, still was worried because there's always those guys that have one great year and they get hyped up, but then they get to the NFL and they get exposed. Not Joe Burrow. It's backing up everything that the players have said, which I thought that was just fan service. This guy's legit. I'm excited to see what he can do. Still upset that we didn't get the win. But I love the fact that after the man threw the interception, it was like nothing happened. I like the fact that he said today in an interview that he's glad that it's a short week because he wants to get that bad taste out of his mouth. And I'm glad that he went to every single player in the locker room and said, hey, let's forget about this. He took accountability for all the mistakes that he made and is ready to push this team forward. So for me, this is a very exciting beginning to the Joe Burrow era.
IQ.
He's not the only one who wants to get that bad takes out of his mouth Thursday. What I saw from Joe Burrow, very impressive. I saw somebody who we can talk about all the on-the-field stuff, but some of the intangibles are very important with Joe Burrow. One of the things I saw that kind of separates him from Andy Dalton and a lot of other quarterbacks in this league is that that moment came where it would have been very easy for him to fold. The interception, you know, he could have easily folded there. They could have easily gotten stuck there. He could have easily kind of put his head down and been like, well, you know, what can you do, right? But
let me switch it up right here. But then he kind of stepped it up, and in that last drive, like he looked like prime Big Ben. He looked like prime Tom Brady. He looked like a franchise NFL quarterback in this league doing what he has to do to get the team down the field. Unfortunately, controversial call at the end of that drive kind of cost him it, but it doesn't take it away what he did there to get that team down the field and put them in a position where they really should have at the very least tied the game. And again, somebody that's a very important trait, you know, having a quarterback who in that moment doesn't fold. You know, that's what you need, a guy who can step up. That's why Steeler fans are never going to give up on Big Ben, you know, because, oh, yeah, you know, he doesn't fold in that moment. You just need him there for the last 2 minutes. That's really what happened with Pittsburgh. I'm not trying to jump ahead here, but he was really there in the key moments, made those drives, had that 2 minute drill, you know, showed up where he had to. That's what you saw out of Joe Burrow, is that when it counted the most, he was at his best. And, you know, I think Joe Burrow is going to be a good quarterback in this league for a very, very long time. I think Cincinnati found themselves a good one.
Yeah, for me, big thing that I saw, first of all, let me say the Chargers, they didn't look as good as I thought they were going to look. Now, I did pick the Bengals to win this game, and I said it's going to come down to can they dominate on the trenches, right? But the thing that impressed me from Burrow, his trenches, the O-line wasn't great, right? As Ace was saying. So usually a rookie quarterback falls in there. Like look at Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones was getting murdered. And again, not to go ahead. And he looked bad. And I don't blame him. He's just getting killed. You, as Joe Burrow, get pressure every time. You expect them to get mistakes. So I was surprised when Joe Burrow kept his composure and kept moving. Now, I will disagree here with Quincy. I don't think that was a controversial call. I thought it was a clear offensive pass interference. Now, that doesn't take away from the pass. The pass was beautiful. The catch was great. But it was a clear push-up, and in my opinion, was a clear offensive pass interference. Now, again, that doesn't take away that Burrow put that ball where it had to be. That doesn't mean that the offensive pass interference is not against Burrow. The pass was perfect. But it was clear OPI, which was unfortunate, right? It would be great if Burrow would have got that W. I think that would have been big. It was on the road, so that's all good stuff. But I think Burrow played good enough to get that W. Let's be honest. He played well enough to earn that W. So they didn't lose because of him, which as a rookie, that's your main thing. Play good, keep progressing, and not cost your teams the loss. And he didn't. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I know we're all talking about Joe Burrow, and rightfully so after that performance, certainly that last drive. I do want to give a shout out, though, to this Bengals defense and what they were able to do on Sunday, because if not for that defensive performance late in that game, we're not talking about Joe Burrow's last drive where he should have thrown a touchdown, because in all likelihood, the Chargers take a big lead or they just run the clock out. Remember, when Joe Burrow got the ball back with 3 minutes, they had no timeouts at that point. So I think, you know, I got to give a lot of props to that defense. They held the chart. Look, the Chargers aren't going to be a top offense in this league, certainly. But man, you know, this is a defense that was put in some bad spots late. Let's not forget Joe Mixon fumbles, puts the Chargers in scoring position. That they come up with a big goal line stand. And then Joe Burrow throws the interception on the very next drive, which puts once again the Chargers, you know, with a chance to run the clock out at that point. Like I said, they had no timeouts. The Bengals had no timeouts, 5 minutes to go. If they get a first down there with about 3-4 minutes to go on the clock, they need one more first down to run it all out and the game's over. So thanks. Props to them. Jesse Bates, I thought, returned to form, and he was terrific in this game. You know, Sam Hubbard was very good. You had William Jackson in a return to form. I think, you know, we've talked about this Bengal defense and some of the guys who needed to step up. They all did in this game. And I thought, that was certainly arrow pointing up for a lot of that Bengals defense. But obviously the storyline here in this game is going to be Joe Burrow. I think if you took a 3,000-foot view of this game for Joe Burrow, you would say it was pedestrian, right? If you just looked at the numbers, you know, he threw for what? 100-something yards. You know, I think he had, if you just look at the numbers, like if you look at the analytics, it's like fifth lowest passing DVOA, third lowest QBR, right? You would say this is a very pedestrian day. I thought, though, what that hides was, a very good plan by Zach Taylor. We talked about this going in. Pass rush is going to be an issue here. Joe Burrow is going to be under attack all day. So get the ball out of his hand. Give him some easy throws, things to work with, that he can get run after catch. He had the fifth lowest time to throw of anyone, which means that he got rid of the ball fifth quickest of any quarterback. That's exactly what you want to see in this matchup, because it did. Look, he was still under pressure for too much of this day. Thank you, Bobby Hart. But you know, the plan overall worked. You know, that last drive was incredible. 8 of 10, 7 yards, big time drive. And the thing I really liked about that drive, like I've watched a lot of Big Ben fourth quarter comebacks. the thing about this one, you know, you go back to like that 2008 Steelers drive. The thing about that drive that was so impressive to me, they never got into a fourth down. Right? Those late drives, when you start to get into third down, fourth down, that's where everything tightens up. That's where everybody, you know what I mean? Everybody's getting nervous. When you're staying in early downs and you're able to move the ball in early downs, you got that momentum as an offense. You feel hot as an offense. Joe Burrow felt hot in those moments. He was, like I said, he was 8-10 in that last drive. PFF gave him an 84 on that drive. Would have been one, you know, if that were his game, he would have been one of the highest passers of the week. You know, look, the downside of Burrow in this game was, I think, the deep ball. And Ace, you talked about this, a couple misses he had to John Ross, a miss he had to AJ Green. You know, the miss he had to AJ Green, he talked about it. Hey, you know, it's a high school throw. He should be making that. Disappointed in himself. John Ross, but you like to see John Ross dive because maybe he could bring that in. There's another one that he had to AJ Green in the corner of the end zone, a little underthrown. Casey Hayward's able to make up some space, get a hand on it. You like to see that a little, you know, either loft it a little more so AJ can go up and get it because he's so good in the air, or just put it further out there where only AJ can get it. And then there was the one on the sideline. AJ could have got 2 feet in. Looked like that throw was a little late. The thing about these throws, right? If these are our big, these would be my big criticisms of Burrow. The problem with that is that the criticism would be that he just hasn't had enough time to work out the timing of those routes, right? These are throws we know he can make. We saw Joe Burrow make these throws all of last year. This is a guy who's had limited practice time with this offense, and you expect that the timing and the ball placement on some of those routes down the field is going to be a little off. The thing about Burrow is he didn't throw a bunch of interceptions, or he didn't even throw a bunch of dropped interceptions or throwing into coverage. I thought he was very good, and especially on that last drive, you guys hit on it. That's some big money throws that he had there. It shows the composure that he has as a young quarterback. And you know, the one caution I'll say is we do this thing, and look, no one's more guilty of this than me, where we do this thing where we talk about young players and we expect linear progression. We just think about their first game is their worst game, and then everything from here is going to be an upward trend. I think we have to be, you know, I think we just have to be cautious of that with Burrow. As more tape comes out with Burrow, teams are going to understand his tendency. It's going to get a little more difficult for him out there. But, you know, right now, I think Bengals fans have a lot to be excited about, even though, you know, the OPI call, they don't get the win. Bullock, you know, pulls a calf or whatever. Whatever it is, they don't get the win. But what they have is a quarterback who showed big things in big moments.
Yeah, I think for me, and I think the rest of the Bengals fans, the reason that we were so upset about the offensive pass interference call is that Mike Williams literally twice in the game did the same thing against Darius Phillips on like major passes in the game to extend Chargers drives, and it wasn't called. Yeah. And like you even saw with Chase Claypool, he pushed off too. They don't call it.
He did. But like, I don't know if it was a full extension though.
Exactly. So I think that that's going to be something that's going to become a theme in the NFL, where it's like, did this guy push off? And there's actually a clip that shows it zoomed in. Casey Hayward was holding AJ Green before he pushed off on him. So is that holding? Like, what is that? So I think that it's going to be something where the NFL every year, there's always a rule where it's like, was that a catch? Was it not a catch? Was that offensive pass interference? Was that not offensive pass interference? I think that that's going to be a theme for this season. And I pray that you guys are never in a situation where the game is decided by it.
By OPI? Yeah.
Yes.
It's tough. It seems like it's going to be an emphasis this year in the league.
And they flopped too. So that's another thing.
Right.
Like he tried to sell it even more, like to make it look. And so I wonder how they're going to do that, because we've seen it in the NBA for years, right? That guy's flopping.
Right.
So how can you really determine that if cornerbacks start flopping? Oh, that guy fell down. So that must be offensive pass interference. So it's going to be tough.
It's a tough way. Certainly a tough way to lose the game on that. And then the missed field goal. I mean, it's, you know.
Now, how happy are you with your new kicker, Ace?
I am not happy at all. I am dreading it, because it's like Quincy just went on that rant. I was just like, this is horrible. This is a nightmare. Like, we literally just lost a game off of a missed field goal, and then we go and get a guy that's what he specializes in, is missed field goal. So to me, I said it on Twitter, I would have rather they have called up Ocho Cinco and made him our kicker like we did back in the day. I mean, I think it's the same thing. I think that we should just go for two every time and just do what we can do. I'm just going to say a prayer that I hope that Fat Randy is and his hamstring are okay by Thursday, because Austin Seibert against the Browns is going to be a disaster.
It's a revenge game. You got a revenge game.
He's actually worse in Cleveland than he is on the road, if you want to believe that. splits. He's not, you know, that's what the big excuse was. Cleveland's so difficult to kick at that he can't make a 15-yard freaking field goal. You know, so, hey, Ace, didn't want this to happen to you. I did not wish this on you, but, hey, you got all that Austin Seibert love in Cincinnati for at least a week. So, you know, yeah, yeah. We all know how I feel about the man on this.
Okay, so let's move to the next game. It was the one that we all watched on the spotlight, Monday Night Football, the Steelers against the no O-line Giants. And I'm going to give the floor to Tony since he that's his team.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, thank goodness. Thank goodness this game is over. We can stop talking about, is Ben's elbow going to be okay? The throwing motion, all the ridiculousness that we talked about in the offseason. Thank goodness that's over. You know, it's so funny because Ben didn't look great, especially for the early portions of this game. And my fiance was watching with me. She's also a Steeler fan. And she was so upset at the play calling. The Steelers ran the ball. They were very conservative early on, very clearly wanted to ease Ben into the game. And so she was screaming at the play calling. The Steelers ran the ball on 5 straight first downs, right? It's one of those things where as a Steeler fan, we just want to know, right? Is the guy okay? Are we going to be okay here? Like, can we just see it? Took a little bit for it to get going. But look, you know, Ben Roethlisberger looked okay. I know it was a shaky start. His first throw was this awkward. He's getting hit as he throws, threw it behind him to Connor. It ends up being a fumble they had to jump on. It took him like a quarter and a half, really, to get it together. Better than I expected. You know, I thought the thing for me with Ben in this game is he didn't turn the ball over. And I thought that was key because this is a guy who has, you know, like I've talked about it on this show before, right? The problem with him in 2018 is he led the league in turnovers, led the league in interceptions, I should say. So, you know, Ben looked good. Was he on the same page with everyone? No, but he was on the same page with guys he needed to be on the same page with. Juju, you know, with Ben, 2 touchdowns, 60 something yards. It was good enough. In the passing game, you know, you have to hope that it gets.
Deontay was off with him, right?
Deontay early, yeah. So Deontay had a muffed punt early in the game, and just it felt like from that point he was in his own head. He ran the wrong route at one point. Ben threw it in his back, dropped an easy slant. Just felt like, yeah, Deontay got in his own head, but he did start to pick it up as the game went along. Second half, I thought Deontay was much better. And look, you know, Claypool had a really nice catch along the sideline. James Washington had an unbelievable catch and run for the touchdown, where he's in the air. I mean, the pictures of it are just, you know, there was a great tweet of it last night where the guy said, like, it's ridiculous to think that this guy scored a touchdown because it's he's basically vertical and then lands on his feet and powers his way into the end zone. You know, James Washington was great. And those two guys are nice pieces. I still believe, though, that Juju and Deontay are going to be the 1-2 punch in this offense with Ben. And so I'm happy to see that, you know, Deontay led the team in targets. It wasn't the case that Ben kind of gave up on Deontay as a young guy early on. Watching him struggle, continued to go there. Deontay, I think, ended up the game with 6 catches. At running back, you know, another big key here, which was what's going to happen with James Conner, and it didn't take long. James Conner left the game after, I think, only 15 snaps with an ankle injury. Now, Tomlin says it's not a serious ankle injury, so he may even be back this week. We'll see. But Conner,
you want him back?
Yeah, Conner. Here's the problem for Conner. The problem is he ain't healthy. And he wasn't very good either. And Snell was. Snell was fantastic. You know, the only question, I mean, obviously Snell should be running back 1 going forward because the thing about Snell is he just has that explosiveness. We talk about body transformation with running backs from year one to year two. We saw Le'Veon do this. We saw Connor do this. And now here's Snell. He looks like a different guy from where he was. He's so explosive on that when he first gets the ball that I just don't think you can take it away from him at this point. The only question that's going to bring up is his usage in the passing game because Connor, you know, he had 15. So the game plan in this game was very clearly to go through Connor early. He had 15 snaps. He was targeted on 10 of them. He had 6 carries and 4 passing targets. So, you know, what's going to happen with Benny Snell in the passing game? Is he going to be as big a part of the passing game as they wanted Connor to be? He only had 1 target in this game. Snell did. So we'll see what happens there. The offensive line, I guess, is if you're talking about 1 negative from this game, you'd have to talk about the offensive line. I mean, they were just shaky to start. You had Wisniewski starting for DeCastro. He struggled a little bit. There was a lot of pressure on Ben, and Ben holds onto the ball too long, so you can't put this all on the offensive line. But you know, enough to say the offensive line didn't have their best showing. They also lost a couple players, though. Zach Banner went down. Really tough for him. ACL tear, it seems like, for Banner. He's going to miss the entire season. This is a guy who battled his way to make a roster, then battled his way to win the starting spot, was going into a contract year, could have gotten paid, and now, you know, really unfortunate to see him go down with a year-long injury. You know, for the Steelers, they did have, you know, they did have a right tackle battle this training camp between him and Okorafor. And so Okorafor is starter capable, and he's going to come in and start, and he did after Banner went down, no problem there. The question becomes depth. Right, because Okorafor was going to be your swing tackle. He was going to be the sixth offensive lineman. He could fill in at left tackle if you needed. So you have a problem there. Now, they went out and they signed Gerald Hawkins from the Texans practice squad. He's a player who's been with the Steelers for a while. The question every Steeler fan is asking today is, hey, do we need to move Matt Filer back from left guard to tackle? I think it's too early to talk about that yet. If you had another injury, then yes. But for now, I think the Steelers are going to be fine with where they are. Just some depth problems there. And then Wisniewski has a pec injury. Now, last night it was reported that's a torn pec, done for the year. Tomlin said today he's more optimistic, so maybe it's not a torn pec. Now, Wisniewski was a depth guy. DeCastro's your starter. DeCastro sounds like he's going to play this week, so this shouldn't be a big issue. The only issue here is he was the kind of interior lineman as far as your depth is concerned, and Kevin Dotson is a rookie. Tomlin said today it would take an extraordinary effort to get Kevin Dotson ready to start a football game at this point, so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Going for
endorsements.
Not exactly. Although what's interesting about it is that he did get a ton of ringing endorsements in training camp. So, you know, it might just be one of Tomlin's. You know. Yeah.
Oh, I think we're getting a pattern here about what they were letting out in training camp.
When Deontay Johnson fumbled that punt early in the game, there were a lot of Ryan Switzer comments on Steelers Twitter.
So Q, what do you thought about the Steelers?
It's going to be one of those situations. I'm going to say the same thing for the next game we're going to talk about, that it's hard to glean a ton of information from, because the opponent, whether if they are bad, they played like awful. I thought New York, especially defensively, their personnel is underwhelming. I think what Blake Martinez and Jabril Peppers might have legitimately been their two best players.
And Marcus Golden's okay.
Yeah, you know, I liked some of those guys, but like I wouldn't want them to be my best three players on the defense. So I'm kind of concerned with, well, not concerned, but like, you know, I'm kind of interested to see what the Steelers do moving forward against a little bit tougher competition. The offensive line for the New York Giants just was not interested in blocking anybody. So of course that Steelers defense looked good. Bud Dupree, I think he had the most amount of free runs I think I've ever seen a Pro Bowl level.
Yeah, he lined up in the backfield.
Yeah, they just were gonna let him go. You know, they were playing zone out there with the line. Like, I don't know what was going on. Free runs every day for him. So that was a little bit odd that they were doing there. As far as that Steelers defense, because we could talk about the offense all we want, but that defense is really going to be the bread and butter for this Steeler team. Did they look like how they looked last year? Kind of. They got the turnovers, you know. Some of those turnovers were unforced, like that Daniel Jones interception. I get Bud Dupree got the pressure there. Tony, I know you love pressures. The pressures are important. But that
he
was
didn't just get the pressure. He batted the ball in the air.
Yeah. Well, the one in the end zone where he just kind of threw it up for grabs, and then
but he hit his arm. He hit his arm as he threw. Bud hit his arm as he threw. Yeah.
That ball should have went straight to the ground or straight out of bounds. Like there is a lot of other ways he could have handled that. That reminded me, in the Giants, honestly, reminded me a lot of the Deshaun Kizer Browns, where they could move the ball a little bit, but then when they get to the red zone, they don't know what the hell to do with it. And that happened a lot, and I think that kind of cost them for making that game competitive. But the Steelers offense, Big Ben looked fine out there. You can't say anything bad about him. 200 plus yards, three touchdowns, found Juju. You know, it looks like they're bouncing back from that kind of a down year. James Conner was awful. He matched Big Ben rushing yards with like six attempts, 9 yards. That's not good, but Benny Snell was really good. So, boom, you kind of replaced that. I always liked Benny Snell, even when he was in Kentucky, even after he got drafted by Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's nice to see him kind of shine out there. You would like to see more of James Washington, you know, get them the ball more consistently to James Washington. I think he is somebody who could have a little bit of a breakout here next to Juju. And with Ben, I like that they kept him under 35 attempts. I like that they kept the attempts close to 30. I like that they kept it low with him, you know, going on down the season. If he gets closer to consistently hitting that 40 mark, I worry about his longevity throughout the rest of the season, because I don't know if it's gonna, if the elbow is going to hold up. But for right now, the Steelers look good. I mean, to be fair, though, they were supposed to look good against the Giants, and they did what they were supposed to do. So as of this moment, there's nothing really to gleam one way or the other with the Steelers. They did what they were supposed to do. They handled business.
Ace.
Yeah, for me, like Quincy said, the Steelers went out and handled business. We expected them to beat the Giants. Obviously, there has been a little bit of a slow start to their seasons the past couple of seasons, but you know, this is what we expected. We saw this defense really shine last season and really come together, especially after they added Minka to it. But I think the defensive line really just was the shining light on this game. And, you know, I don't know if it's just because the Giants had a weak offensive line. This is a very good defensive line. I mean, I think they finished number one in our rankings coming into the season. So this wasn't a surprise for us, especially going against a weak unit. TJ Watt definitely continues to take a step to show that last year wasn't a fluke by any means. And then when you look at it on the offensive side, Ben is back. I mean, I think that he had to come out and make a statement this game, because if he doesn't, everyone's talking about, is his elbow okay, or vice versa. So I think he came out and did what he needed to do. I think, to me, honestly, and this may be because I have James Conner and Benny Snell as my running back, and I picked Benny Snell because I knew that James Conner wasn't going to stay healthy. Yeah. Just admit that Benny Snell is the starting running back. Why are we doing all of this stuff with James Conner where it's like, oh, he might still be the running back? It's clear that Benny Snell, after yesterday, can handle the load. He's going to be a guy that hopefully can stay healthy. I don't see why there's even a question that Benny Snell shouldn't be the starter. I mean, in my opinion, I don't think that you guys are going to keep James Conner anyway after this year because he can't stay healthy. Why not just go ahead and roll with Benny Snell? We'll see how it goes. Maybe it's just that Tomlin has a special relationship with him and guys in the locker room do. But to me, it's just clear as day, like 19 carries, 100 and something yards. You know, if he has a touchdown, that's an amazing game for him. I mean, why not? And like Tony pointed to, when James Conner was in, he wasn't having a good game. I mean, they weren't moving the ball. So for me, it's pretty obvious there. Juju's back to form. I think that they have something in Chase Claypool, which when they drafted him, everyone was scared about. I think that they have to get him more involved. But, I mean, the Steelers have returned to form. I can't really hate on them. This is what they were supposed to do. They went out and handled business. Now, if they would have struggled with them, maybe there would be something that we could talk about. But the Steelers clearly are taking this season serious.
So, for me, big thing was it was basically, again, in the trenches. You have a great D-line and a left tackle for he's a rookie. I tend to give, you know, leeway to rookies, but – you have a left tackle for the Giants that he forgot he was tackle and he wanted to block interior. Bud Dupree's here lining over his shoulder and he's like, I don't see you there. You don't exist. Let me just go with this guy that is already engaged with the guard. Right? So then we're doubling the DN and Bud Dupree's like, I guess I have a clear shot to the quarterback. Or Saquon, right? And that kept happening. And then the right tackle, for some reason, was getting confused. Should I block the guy on my right side, the guy in front of me? What should I do? Do I supposed to know how to play football? I mean, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And then Daniel Jones then throws the pick on TJ Watt. That was a horrible pick. Like, TJ Watt was just there looking at it. Look at him.
I mean, it was a great play on TJ's part to read the quarterback's eyes.
Listen. TJ is literally looking at him. I'm not saying he didn't make a good play, but if you're Daniel Jones, dude is just literally staring. And Daniel Jones just looking that way.
You didn't see him.
That's what we call in Cincinnati a Gus Farah. Right to the defensive end.
TJ just jumped a little bit and grabbed the ball, right? And the second interception was a lollipop. Even with all that, I would expect that a blowout with all those things happening. When you can't hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah,
we can hear you. But with all those things happening, I was expecting a major blowout, right? Because when you have no O-line as a quarterback, you're going to suffer. And then the defense is not existing either. Again, the Giants
defense. It kind of was a blowout, though. I mean, remember that there was an oh, by the way, touchdown. The score of this game was 26-10 before they scored an oh, by the way, you know, with like a minute to go in the game.
Okay, but I would expect it similar to the Ravens-Browns score. That's what I'm saying. how those two are close.
Yeah, well, not to get ahead of ourselves. I see what you're doing. That's a great segue. I'll give you props on that one. I didn't see that one. I didn't follow, but I like where you're going.
By the way, fun fact there. Daniel Jones, second in the night. Daniel Jones and Big Ben Roethlisberger, second and third in the night in rushing yards total in that Steelers Giants game. Above Saquon and James Conner. Yeah. Who would have? That is a prop bet for the ages that I wish I would have taken.
Well, let's be honest. You right now, if you're playing the Giants, the Steelers did it perfectly. They said, you're just going to stop Saquon Barkley. All of y'all can try to beat us. Saquon, you ain't running. And that's what the Steelers did. They executed beautifully. Yeah.
They got their turnovers, too. I mean, the one thing, you know, I'll mention the defense real quick, right? Because I talked about the turnovers and would that regress this year. I still have a feeling it probably will, but they're off to a great start. I mean, they're on pace for 30. I know week one pace stuff is stupid, but, like, they're on pace for 32 right now. They had 38 last year. This is a game where, I said I expect multiple turnovers. The worry would have been against Daniel Jones, who turns the ball over so much. The guy had 12 interceptions, 18 fumbles last year. If they didn't get multiple turnovers in this game, that would be a worry. Because they got their turnovers, I think they're going to be okay. And like you guys talked about, I mean, this is a great. If this were a boxing match, okay, the commission would not have sanctioned this fight. The Steelers' defensive line against the Giants' offensive line. It was a mismatch. But the Steelers did a great job. They hit Saquon behind the line. Saquon had 15 carries. 8 times he was hit behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, they were phenomenal. I think the defense is picking up right where they left off.
Go ahead, Ace.
Have you guys seen the new Terminator movie?
I have not.
I haven't, man.
Spoiler alert. It's time to terminate James Conner. Just get rid of him.
Go ahead, man. Well, I was just going to say James Conner, the problem for James Conner is he's got a great story in Pittsburgh. I think that does play some role in it. You know, he's a local kid. He went to Pitt, cancer survivor. So I think that does play some role in it. But like you guys said, I think they'll probably give Conner another outing here and at least a split carry situation with Benny Snell. But if he has another performance like he did on Monday night, they can't stick with him for much longer.
Yeah, yeah, great story and everything. But when Big Ben outrush you at 38 years old, bro, I don't care how great your story is, and he gets you. I got a great story. The Browns ain't trying to throw me out there running back. Like, no, that is only going to get you so far. And by the way, Andrew Thomas drafted in the top 10.
I know.
First offensive tackle off the board.
Yeah.
So, that offensive line was bad, but, I don't really think they had an excuse to be that bad. Everybody tells me Kevin Zeitler's the reason the Browns line sucked last year, right? They not having him was the key to it. So, I don't know how that line was that bad. They thought they were going to upgrade without having Nate Solder. Nate Solder was awful last year.
But the reality is with him – again, for some reason, he kept blocking like he was a guard. He kept engaging.
There was a lot of miscommunication on the offensive line, no doubt about it. I mean, the Steelers had so many free rushers.
I know, that's my problem. Anyway, so before we continue to the final review for today, I want to say that we're going to start. Thanks for everybody that's been following us, that subscribed to the channel. Thank you. We have 92 people watching currently, so don't forget to hit that like button. And if you haven't subscribed, share this video, share the channel. We are coming also now on Thursday. So on Thursdays, we're going to do the preview of the game. That's why we haven't talked about any preview of the game. And we will be previewing the matchup between the Browns and the Bengals, which is Thursday night. And we'll be previewing the Steelers and the Ravens matchup. So we're going to do that on Thursdays. And on Tuesday, we're going to do the review of the matchups. Okay. So now there was one AFC North matchup. And then next week is going to be another one. This week. And look, two things I'm going to say. And I don't want to speak first, but I'm just going to say two things. Right. First, somebody here said Hollywood Brown was going to lead the AFC North right now.
I knew this was what you were going to. I knew you were going to say that.
We're doing season long victory laps in week one.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We're going to do a victory lap every single week.
Just know, Tony. I mean, not Tony, but just know, Sonny, that last year around week three, John Ross was leading the NFL.
Whoa! Don't give me the curse of the Ross.
Didn't Marquise Brown have more yards last year? He had more yards in week one last year. I think he had 157 last year in week one. So he's actually not on pace for the 500 he had last year.
On pace right now, he's what, 1600?
We're not letting this victory lap happen. It is not going down.
All I'm saying is, y'all are unnoticed. Second, I thought we were going to win. I'm shocked how we won. But I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. I want Q. Go ahead, Q. Floor is yours.
By the way, I appreciate how we all came off the edge with the free run like the Steelers did against the Giants to stop that. No,
right. No, I was ready. I knew he was going to go. I had the stats ready.
You got a pressure, Tony. You got a pressure. All right. So, Brent, I want to talk about, you know, what I gleaned from what happened on Sunday from the Ravens. And it's kind of hard to glean anything from the Ravens' offensive performance, not because they didn't play well. They played excellent. It's just they didn't really have the toughest day at the office this week. You know, it was wide open throws to Mark Andrews, wide open balls to, like, Marquise Brown. I think he had one ball that was contested by Andrew Sadeo. Everything else was wide open if you watch that game. The secondary for Cleveland, whatever this communication is with the zone, like, it was as bad with the communication when the Browns were in this zone against pass sets as the Giants were on the offensive line against, you know, Bud Dupree. Like, it was that bad for this secondary. I don't know what happened there. So, you know, I think everybody on that Ravens offense will admit they executed, they did what they had to do, but also was an easy day in the office for Lamar. Find the open man, hit the open man, didn't really have to do too much. He really didn't even have to run all that much, you know. So, you know, it that is what it is with the Ravens offense. They're a good team. We knew that coming in. We definitely know that now. Their defense is really good. Calais Campbell, Derek Wolfe, Brandon Williams. Yeah, they're going to stop the run inside. You know, that ain't nobody running inside on them in the NFL. I just don't believe that. I think they're going to be really solid there. Patrick Queen had himself a solid day, an impressive day there. And I think Deshaun Elliott really did himself a solid too in that game. So, you know, that defense looks like it's going to hold up. Now, let's talk about what everybody wants me to talk about, the Cleveland Browns, because they looked bad. Like, as good as the Ravens look, this is all about the Browns, like, just coming there and just, I don't know what was going on. First of all, the offense looked like it was, I watched that game over, and I have come to the conclusion, the very logical and real life conclusion, that the ghost of Freddie Kitchens stayed in that stadium in week four after they beat the Ravens and just possessed that coaching staff, because that looked like everything I hated from Freddie Kitchens. The empty sets, the spreading out your running backs wide every freaking play, not running the ball to start the drive when that's your best option you have, not hitting your tight ends, not really using your tight ends, having Baker step back and do these seven-step drops that he's not good at, he's never been good at. You know, just terrible play calling, running the fake punt at the 30-yard line. Like, you got it. When you play the Ravens, you can't make it easy for them. You made it. How many short fields did the Browns give the Ravens in that game? I counted like three or four times. Yeah, they gave the Ravens at least the 50-yard line. And if you think you're going to contain the score against the Baltimore Ravens, the best offense in football, is anybody in disagreement with that? Is there, other than like Kansas City, is there a better offense? And is there a better offense that's going to be under the 50-yard line than Baltimore? No, there's not. You kept giving them the ball, red zone opportunities here and there, hither and there, just for free, just giving them all these red zone possessions. And then you look at the score and people act shocked? No, that's not surprising what happened there. The second they decided they were going to make these decisions, Baker threw that one interception, which is kind of excusable. Calais Campbell just made a really good play there. And was it Marlon Humphreys made the good play to get on the ball there. That's not an interception. I'm be like, Baker, damn it. You know, he didn't do that this game. But it was the fumble by Chubb. It was the getting the fumble from Picard, getting the ball all the way down to the 29, and penalty, 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 penalty. Now you're in third and 39, can't even kick the field goal, and even when you do, the guy misses the extra point and the field goal. Nothing went right in this game. Like, it was a Twilight Zone game. Odell Beckham Jr., what happened there, man? Like, 10 targets. Like, people talk about the Browns were not trying to get Odell the ball or whatever. He got 10 targets, 3 receptions. And those 7 misses, those were almost all drops. Like, I don't know if they were all drops, but he almost had a season's worth of drops. We talked about Mark Andrews and his drops being a problem. He only had 7 for like the entire year last year. Odell almost had 7 in one game. I don't know what was going on there. If he catches half of those balls, this Browns offense looks a lot better. And they probably put up more points. It was just one of those games where nobody came to play. And it's so bad. It got so bad, the level of play, that it's honestly hard for me to think that there's anything concrete there, because I just can't believe they're that bad. Like, there's bad, but like that bad? Are they that bad? I don't know. We'll find out here on Thursday because it's all on the line for him, right? You already got embarrassed against one of the best teams in the NFL. Now you're playing a division rival on Thursday Night Football. You know, what are you made of? Are you going to get embarrassed? If you get embarrassed again, then what happened on Sunday against Baltimore, that's just what you are. And that's what this team is, and that's a 4-12 team. But if you show up and show that that's not you and actually play to your level of play and Odell doesn't want to be in the shadow realm for the whole game, then, you know, maybe you might have a better team there. But, yeah, it was all in all frustrating, very disappointing. They played so bad that I can't believe they're this bad. Like, there's bad, but there's this bad. And a lot of people are going to blame it on, oh, shortened offseason, new head coach, all that. I'm not buying it. I'm honestly not buying it. You know what? Ron Rivera won his first game with Washington. Dwayne Haskins, new system, young quarterback, was able to win a game, was able not to look like an embarrassment. They weren't prepared. They didn't come to play. They weren't focused. And, you know, when you give the Ravens short fields, they're going to embarrass you. When you give the Ravens opportunities to do so, they're going to embarrass you. The Ravens are one of those teams where if you give them a small slope, they will build that into an avalanche that will crush your soul. And that's what they did. And you know what? To be fair to the Browns, I don't think this is going to be the only team Baltimore is going to beat by 30 at home. Let's just be honest. They beat the Patriots by a lot last year at home. So, and they're not going to be the only good team that Baltimore is going to roll at home. So I'm not panicking, but there are a lot of things that I hope aren't confirmed on Thursday that I saw. That's where I'm at.
So let me say a couple of things. I'm going to say the good things that I saw from the Browns. Let me start with that. I thought that Browns O-line played well. I thought the Kate Wills played well. Because remember I said the Ravens should test Wills on the left tackle. I thought he held his own. He played well throughout. The running backs ran the ball fairly well. When they were trying to run between the tackles, they got stuffed for the most part. When they ran the stretch, there was one play that Malik Harrison took the worst angle in the world. And I think that was a 40-yard right there, a 50-yard run. I think it was by Chubb, or maybe it would have been. Both running backs went well. The Browns look like their main focus, and I wonder if this is going to be what most teams are going to defend the Ravens, was stopping the run. Lamar didn't run the ball much, but when he ran, he was okay, not great. But the running backs weren't great either. Like, if you go back to yards per carry, maybe 3 yards per carry, both of them had. But what that allowed was a lot of one-on-one matchups. And Lamar was accurate, right? If Lamar's going to be this accurate, which is what I have expected this year, and everybody's just going to load that box, well, they better just blitz and hope they can get there, because the Ravens put the receivers and the tight end in good position. The one touchdown on Mark Andrews, he was wide open. Snead should have another touchdown. He got stopped in the two, but he was wide open. He made the run after the catch. He almost got a touchdown, right? The other Mark Andrews touchdown was well defended. He used his body well. It was a good pass. But overall, I thought the Browns secondary was just bad. Like I was trying to see the game, and I was like, there was a point in the second half that looked like Browns defense and offense just were like, we're done. We're done. What are you doing here? Can we just fast forward this? That's how Odell specifically. And I don't know how Quincy feels about this, but if Odell was a Raven, I'll be pissed. Because you as a leader, even if we're down, this is when you have to come on. Come on, guys. Let's pull. I agree with Quincy. A couple of the balls, if you say you're elite, like Odell thinks he's a top receiver, right? Top five receiver. You had to make some of that catches. There was one that Baker threw it behind, but it wasn't like he needed to stretch back to get it. He just moved back a little bit. He dropped it. So I thought Odell had a bad game. Now, let me also say about Baker. What I saw from Baker, and this is something that I saw his first year and his second year, and I thought by year three, he was going to correct it. There was snap the ball, and I won't say every time in the game, but most of the time in the game, I feel like he was just watching one half of the field. One half of the field. I don't know if that also frustrated Odell, because he might have been open on the other times. But if he snapped and he looked left, I never saw him going. and the Ravens weren't getting to the Browns, to Baker. It wasn't like they were just sacking him, pressuring him. He had time, and he still looked to the one half of the field. And then whoever he thought in that half, he was going to force it. He should have a second pick. Malik Harrison made an outstanding play, and then Chuck Clark just dropped the interception. So overall, I think Baker played bad. The receivers for the Browns, specifically Odell. Look, I thought Njoku played well. I don't know what happened because I saw he went to the IR. But the touchdown pass to Njoku, he was wide open. And then he made a great catch and a really good throw by Baker against Tavon Young. But, yo, the Browns need to get good or fix it quick because right now, like if I just go by what I saw from both teams, the Bengals are coming.
Yeah, so let me jump in real quick there about the whole Odell thing. One of the things I saw early on, I was like, oh, this ain't going to be good, is when they didn't target Odell in the first quarter. I knew that was not going to have a great effect on the game because Odell is somebody you want to get involved early, you know, for your own benefit, quite honest. Like so much of the Odell stuff, I get tired of how it's framed, like, oh, Odell's this diva, Odell's this and that. You know, we could talk about the body language all we want about Odell Beckham. He had 7 drops. He better have bad body language. He better not be walking out there trying to pump. Are you listening to that guy with 7 drops? If he's out there, hey, guys, you need to get focused. You get focused and catch the ball. That's like, true. So I don't care what he did as a leader at that point. You ain't leading nothing. You can't catch the damn ball. You get targeted 10 times and you catch it 3. So with Odell, like, people are dogging him on that and people are getting on Odell, rightfully so. He had a terrible game. And it wasn't even because, like, Marcus Peters did a good job on him. But it wasn't because Marlon Humphreys was really shutting him down. He was getting open. He just was not finishing to save his life. And you know what? That's on him. And people are slandering him. And it's up to him to prove people wrong on Thursday night. But I tell you one thing here. You're hearing all these Odell trade rumors. I'm normally the first guy to tell you that's garbage. That's not there. If they don't win this game Thursday, if they come out of this Thursday night game looking as bad as they did against the Ravens, oh, Odell's probably getting traded by the time they play Washington. Like, that's going to happen. They're going to have to shake something up because they have to send the bat signals out to the fan base that, like, hey, we're trying to do something here. Because an 0-2 start is one thing, but an 0-2 start looking as bad as you have, looking as flat as you have, and looking as terrible on offense as you have is not really acceptable. And again, people want to dog on Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's not the problem that day. He wasn't really the issue. Like, he didn't do the Baker Mayfield. If he would have done the Baker Mayfield thing that I'm worried about him doing, which is when he's down, he melts down and throws like 3 terrible interceptions and it just kind of piles on top of each other. That's not really what Baker did there. He held the ball when he got sacked that one time where he would have tried to throw it out that sack and that would have been a terrible decision. Like, he didn't let it pile up. And that's a good thing I saw from Baker Mayfield. Everything else was, you know, up or down. I can't really take good or bad of it. You know, it wasn't a good game. It wasn't a terrible game, but it was a mediocre game for Baker Mayfield. You know, we could talk about Jarvis Landry, try to give him credit, but I felt like the Ravens were explicitly like, hey, throw it to Jarvis. We don't mind that. Go underneath to Jarvis all you want. He can have it. You know, so yeah, he had a good day statistically, but it was because that's what the Ravens wanted them to do with the design of that game plan. And I just felt like the play calling was off too. You know, why didn't they run the ball more towards, you know, those edges of Baltimore instead of trying to go inside? I felt like they got scared off inside and got scared off of running the ball completely, got scared off of trying to do any play action. And I understand the play action getting scared off that a little bit because Calais Campbell was a wreck in that game. And he would have blew up a couple of those play actions and probably gotten a sack, but you got to try it. You know, you got to do something there. You know, you can't just keep doing what you did last year that you know for a fact didn't work. You know, again, a lot of bad things. But I'm going to wait until see what they come out looking like from a philosophical standpoint offensively to really get concerned. Because I don't know if this was them trying to catch Baltimore off guard or if this is what they're planning to do for the rest of the season. Because if this is what they're planning to do for the rest of the season, yeah, people are going to get traded. And this, you're probably looking at, you know, maybe Trey Lance in the draft. You know, if this continues on, but it's a 1-game sample size out of 16. I can't really take too much of it. Sure. I just get to Thursday, get to Thursday and then assess from there.
Ace, what do you thought about the game, man?
So I have several thoughts on the game itself. Obviously, it got out of hand. The Ravens are just a team that if they punch you in the mouth, they can do that. I mean, I know that as a Bengals fan losing 43-16 in our first matchup with them last season. several things stick out to me. I know people don't want to talk about it, but I think Odell's mind was not on the game because he was involved in a literally trending topic that was very embarrassing for him for literally multiple days. And so I'm not trying to make that the excuse, right? I'm not trying to make
very
that the
crappy
excuse,
situation for him to be in.
But you have literally everyone, you know, looking at you, all eyes on you. You've seen these tweets all week and stuff like that. He's probably like that's kind of awkward, right? Like if the defender is coming up to you and he makes a joke about that, like how are you not supposed to be thinking about that? So I think honestly, I think that played a role. As crazy as it sounds, I think that that was in his head. He was thinking about it. He's a very emotional player, as Quincy pointed to. He's always been emotional, but I like that he's emotional. He wants to win. He wants to do well. But like you said, I think the performance that he had, if that doesn't happen, I don't think Odell goes out and has that lackluster of a performance. I think that it was in his head. I mean, it was a major headline. I've never been a celebrity. I've never had people making jokes and stuff. I'm sure he is a guy that is on social media. I'm sure that he saw all of it. He played it well because he made a joke about it. But obviously, you know, that was on his mind, I think. The other thing, we always talked about the injuries and what happened coming into this season in that secondary, right? And I think that that was a major Achilles heel for the Browns. I mean, we talk about not having Greedy Williams out there. We talk about the draft pick going down early.
Delpit.
Pretty much shown. Delpit not being there, that was shown. I mean, they traded for Ronnie Harrison, but he's not ready to step in right now. Like, he's got to get some snaps to get adjusted and everything. And the Ravens clearly took advantage of that. And when you look at all of the PFF grades for the Browns secondary, they were bad, which is what we were concerned about going into the season. And so that's their Achilles heel right now. And it's going to take them to try to fight back from injuries and do what they can to improve that, or else teams are going to try to attack them in that way. The other thing, we're talking about everything, but when you have a bad secondary, what is a way to help that out? You have to get your defensive line involved. You've got to make it so that these guys don't have all day to throw. So Myles Garrett, if you're as good as you're supposed to be, you need to at least have one sack, bro. And if Cleveland wants to turn this around, I mean, obviously they saw what Joey Bosa just did to us. If you want to have a shot to beat the Cincinnati Bengals, put Myles Garrett on Bobby Hart every snap. And if he can't get a sack off of that, then Cleveland is in trouble. But in order for them to help out that secondary, you got to get that defensive line more involved. Obviously, it's Lamar Jackson. They're going to do their thing. They came and handled business. But like Quincy is saying, the panic button is going to have to get hit. If you let Joe Burrow air it out with all of our receivers against that secondary, it's going to be a long day. And so the Browns definitely have to hold it together here until they can get that secondary back. And they got to get the offense rolling. Odell can't come out and go 3 for 10. He has to be somewhat of a threat in that game, and they've just got to get it rolling. And I think that it also is – I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Stefanski guy. I didn't like the pick when you guys hired him, but he's got to do something to make this make sense, because the whole I'm going to give Kareem Hunt more carries than Nick Chubb thing, I don't get when Nick Chubb was a top running back. Now, Kareem Hunt is great and amazing, but come on, like – you got to give one of those guys. You got to commit one way or the other. Whenever
I think after the fumble,
after the fumble, which I understand and I get it. Like, you have, it's almost a gift and a curse, because we have Gio and Joe Mixon. Gio's nowhere near Kareem Hunt. Don't get it twisted. I'm trying to say that, but you have to clearly define who's the starting running back. Now, if it is Kareem Hunt, then that's fine. But I don't think that you pivot or punt from Nick Chubb. I don't think Nick Chubb was the issue last year. You know, so I think that they need to define what they're going to do there. If it is a two-headed attack, then that's fine. But you have to do something, and you have to make adjustments against Cincinnati, because the Ravens, they're going to do that to people, like Quincy said. But if we see the same thing against the Bengals, then I think it becomes an issue for sure.
Just to say, in Myles Garrett's defense, five pressures.
Man, I was about to say, someone's pointing out in chat. I was about to say,
but he was the X factor. When we talked about this game, like, that's who I was yeah, looking for to get in Lamar's grill and to rattle him. And obviously the Ravens probably just said, we're just going to key in on Myles Garrett, and we're just going to try to let the secondary get taken advantage of. But you got to make that guy. I'm not trying to say he's overrated or anything, but we've got to get more from him as well, especially with the secondary banged up like it is.
Yeah. P- PFF did a study a couple of years back where they went over the like what's it better to have, a pass rush or a good secondary? And their study came out and said it's better to have a good secondary because even if you get pressure on the quarterback, if your secondary sucks, right, then they're still able to complete the throw, right? He'll find the open receiver under pressure.
So they're saying pressures are not that important, is what you're saying.
Not as important as coverage, which is I think what we're getting at here when we talk about Myles Garrett had 5 pressure and didn't make a single difference in this game because Lamar Jackson was great.
Because somebody was open when he got those pressures. Yeah. Because Mark Andrews is sitting there like, hey, dog, just throw me the ball real quick. It don't really matter. And look, that's the problem that I have with this Browns defense. We knew what the inside of this defensive line was going to be. We knew Mark Andrews was going to be – well, not Mark Andrews. Mark Ingram was going to be able to get the inside pretty easy against his defense because the linebacking and inside defensive line were what they were. What they were depending on was this secondary to be good. And I think the personnel is fine in the secondary. I think one thing Ace said is ringing really true, and I talked about this before the season started. When Greedy was out there, Denzel wasn't. When Carl Joseph was out there during training camp, then Sadejo wasn't, or then you didn't trade for Ronnie Harrison yet, so he wasn't out there. And then Terrence Mitchell's out there, but all the other 3 guys are not out there. Everybody, Kevin Johnson out there, but now nobody else is there. You know, it was always this kind of whack-a-mole game to get the number one secondary out there during training camp. And what I saw in that scrimmage where everybody was like, Case Keenum lit it up. No, Case Keenum just threw to the open man because the secondary didn't know where to be. They didn't know how to play with each other yet, and I'm really not trying to throw at the coaches yet because it's been one game, but that was an obvious problem. You saw that problem coming, right? And that's the key issue that I have with this week's game. All of these things were obvious problems that you could have saw coming into it. Throwing the ball over 35 times with Baker Mayfield and having that many, you know, shotgun sets. You knew that was a problem with them last year. Why did you do it this year? That's kind of questionable. The defense, you know, you saw that the zone was an issue during camp. Why didn't you just decide, you know what, we'll take our chances. We'll just run more man this week against Baltimore and take our chances there because our personnel isn't bad. You know, we'll just put Ronnie Harrison out there to run some man because he doesn't know the scheme yet, but he can run man out there. Why didn't we do that? Instead, we kept him on the bench the entire game. That made no sense when tight ends are running up and down the field wide open the entire game. You talk about special teams. Austin Seibert. I'm not a football genius, everybody. I just read Pro Football Focus and Pro Football Reference and take the stats and report them here to you. I'm not a genius. I do not know an encyclopedia's worth of football, but I saw Austin Seibert coming in May. I saw that coming in May, and nobody in that office thought, hey, let's bring in some competition for the guy. Let's see how he handles pressure. Let's get him at the stadium more to see if he can kick in these certain conditions. No, we decided to ignore all of that until he missed 2 field goals, and all of a sudden now we're running around putting Cody Parkey in, who missed a field goal, who's more known for missing field goals than he is for making them. Like, these are all avoidable issues that they had coming into week one. And I hope this is just a brain fart and not something indicative of it going on. But these are things that, like, if they continue, these are massive issues with just how avoidable these issues are. And this really isn't that much different than what Freddie Kitchens did last year when we talk about incompetence. Yeah. And that is the biggest problem that I have. This looked very incompetent. I hope it's not incompetent. I hope I'm getting a bad read on it, but this smells like it. And, you know, I just, again, let's get to Thursday. Let's see how they look Thursday, because if I keep talking about what they look like at Sunday 1-4, I'm going to bop a casket, you know?
I know we're running long. Let me say my piece real quick on this game, and then we can wrap this thing up. Because I think you hit it right there, Quincy, right? Which is the idea that nothing changed here, right? It didn't really look like there was a meaningful impact of Kevin Stefanski on the new staff. And some of that, I know you say, look, I don't want to blame it on the offseason and the lack of training camp and all their lack of mini camps and all that. I think some of that maybe, but look, this is a blowout game. I think the final score of this game was what, 38-6? This game was not a blowout, but for 4 possessions, a 4 possession stretch, because this game started about as bad as you can. You know, Baker interception and then fake punt, give the Ravens a free score there. And even at that point, still a game. It's 10-6 Ravens. The Browns just scored a touchdown. It's game back on. The Baltimore fumbles. So it's perfect now, right? The Ravens have the ball in scoring position. They drive to the 29-yard line. What happens from that point? Browns first and 10, 29-yard line in scoring range. Well, I would say scoring range if with a kicker other than Seibert. Let's say they would have had a chance to score. No, what happens from that point? Penalty, penalty, sack, penalty, and you end up in 4th and 41. Because you're not only you out of field, you're out of field range. I mean, you got a punt, right? They pin him at the one. They pin him at the one. It's a good punt. Okay, we can work with this. At least if we get a stop here, we'll put ourselves back in scoring range. We'll be fine. Still a game. No, the Ravens go down 99 yards, touchdown. Okay, 17-6. That's okay. Offense was moving the ball in the last possession. 11-point lead is not insurmountable. Browns can come back. They drive again. They drive again. Get in scoring range again. This time, Cyber comes up big for him. Misses a 41-yard field goal.
That was an Odell drop, too.
Yeah. And that leaves the Ravens with about 40 seconds on the clock before overtime or before halftime. And they march right down the field and score a touchdown, making what was a 10-6 lead with the ball in the opposing territory to a 24-6 lead. Game over. You don't even need to watch the second half of this game. The game ended at that moment. The problem I have, and Quincy, I know you've been, you don't want to jump on the coaching staff, and you've tried to be, I watched your video on this. You were very calm about this. I'm not going to be, because if I'm a Browns fan right now, I'm livid. What year, since 1999, what year could you not say that last four possession stretch about? That four possession stretch could be any Browns team in the last 21 years. That's the problem for the Browns. They continue to shoot themselves in the foot with stupid ass stuff. I'm going to try not to swear. It's stupid ass crap like that. It's ridiculous. It doesn't matter. Baker Mayfield, Ryan Clark went on this whole rant about how Baker Mayfield, we got to stop treating him like a number one pick and start treating him like a walk-on. Baker Mayfield is not the problem. I don't care who's out there at quarterback. The Browns' problem is always the same. Okay, they shoot themselves in the foot in every big moment they've ever been in. Stefanski's the coach. Freddie Kitchens is the coach. Who cares, right? The Browns are the Browns every year, no matter who's out there, no matter who's wearing the uniform. Odell, who cares? That's the problem for me with this organization. Is that I can't evaluate this team because it's always the same. It's always the same problems with this organization. It's always the same problems with the team. The players in the jerseys change. The results don't. And I know, Quincy, it's frustrating for you to watch. And, it's frustrating to evaluate because, boy, I keep saying this team's going to turn the corner at some point. They got a ton of talent. It's always the same.
Yeah. Yeah, my one saving grace is, the Browns have had their best record, their best year ever since coming back was a year where they looked absolute garbage against Pittsburgh that first week in 2007. Yeah. They end up trading Charlie Fry, right after. It was that bad. Like, imagine trading your starting quarterback right after your first game of the year. Yeah, it was just like, that was bad. Get him out of here. Send him to Seattle for a fifth round pick. So, and then after that, they went, 10-5, almost made the playoffs, had one of the best offenses in football. So, the one thing I'm going to always account here for the Browns is, week one's always terrible. Yeah. So, there's, if Big Ben would have came out there and looked bad, right? Tony, right. You as a Steeler fan would have been like, well, Big Ben always looks bad.
Oh, yeah. I would have had all kinds of apologies on this. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
there's a level of okay, well, this happens a lot. But let me see if this is just Steeler luck or if this is an actual problem with the team. That's why I'm saying Thursday night, you got a home game. You got the Thursday night football home advantage, which is the biggest advantage in all of football, the best home advantage you can have. If you can't come out that game, look prepared, and win a football game against a quality team in the Cincinnati Bengals, you got some massive problems. And, you're going to see some trades. Thank you for being real on that, Tony. You sounded like a Browns fan for a second.
I know. I got accused again of being a secret Browns fan. So it's a running theme on the show. Sonny, you're muted, by the way.
Okay, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
I was going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. As you heard, we didn't talk about the previews of the game because we're going to talk about it on Thursday, 5:45 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do this again, but we're going to be previewing the game. And the big matchup this week, Browns-Bengals and the AFC North. So
huge game.
We definitely kind of check it because, let's be honest, neither team want to go not only 0-2, but in the case of the Browns, can be 0-2 and two losses in the division. But anyway, that's what we're going to talk about on Thursday. Ace, where they can find you, man?
You guys can find me here, obviously, at AFC North Talk. So if you're new here, please be sure to hit that subscribe button. You can also find me at New Stripe City. You might want to be paying attention in about, an hour and a half because we're going to be interviewing AJ Green live. So if you guys want to meet the Ravens killer, Ravens fans, please be sure to pull up. And if you just want to be in the presence of greatness, so an amazing person and receiver. Please be sure to check it out. But you can find me there on New Stripe City on YouTube. And then you can find me on Twitter at New Stripe City.
Cute.
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube.com/Quincy Carrier. I'm always there. I'm always posting pretty much daily now since the regular season started. So I'm always having fun on that channel. Ace, by the way, when you interview AJ Green, you got to let him know. I almost got in a fight my freshman year of college because Joe Hayden locked down AJ Green. And my one friend was a Bengals fan, and he was not going to take any AJ Green slander. I love how y'all don't play around with AJ Green in Cincinnati. There will be no slander of AJ Green. There will be none. He made that clear. Man was shirtless in the hallway about to fight me over this game. So you know what? Shout out to AJ. He got Cincinnati go hard from him, and I wish that we could go hard for a player like y'all go hard for AJ Green. So again, make sure y'all check out Ace's interview with AJ Green. That's going to be fire.
Tony.
Yeah, congratulations. First of all, congratulations to Ace for getting that. It's a huge get for him on that channel. So check that out. You can find me on Twitter at Steeler Country. You can find me on Locked On Steelers. I do a weekly appearance there. I think it's going to be Tony Thursdays from going forward. So you'll see me or you'll hear me on that. Check that out wherever you find podcasts. And of course, I'm here every Tuesday and Thursday talking Steelers every week. And I guess, I'll talk Steelers and Browns, right? Because I'm like Browns are my neck and neck in my fandom. In fact, I was thinking, Ace, I know we have this thing where if we get to a thousand subscribers, right? We get me a Dante Moncrief jersey. Just give me a Browns jersey.
Hey, you guys don't notice, but Tony secretly writes for my channel. You guys didn't know.
Ghostwriter,
like Drake.
You can find me SCG Sports on YouTube, Facebook, IG, Twitter. I also started doing IG Liza for halftime for the Ravens, so you can go check me out there. And hey, obviously here Tuesdays and Thursdays, like we said, next Thursday preview of week 2, and it's gonna be fun. I can't wait for that week 2 preview. So hey, thank you for joining us live. Thank you for being here. If you don't mind, as you go out, give that like and share this channel. Thank you, guys.